No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us your questions at BBS Radio 1. Tonight we have a special guest, Haley Jardis, who is not only a finalist for the Miss District of Columbia 2015 contest, but is also a new employee of the newly created D.C. Statehood Commission. We're going to talk about the pageant, we're going to talk about statehood, and what our new effort for equality is going to look like. So I hope you'll call in with questions. Again, the number is 888-628-6008, or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. Before I go any further, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is in Washington these days and ready to rock. Hi, Kathleen. What's up? Are you there?
Not much, Senator Brown. Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing good for an old guy. How are you doing?
No,
I'm glad we have
good.
Haley with us today. And
I can't wait to speak with her and see what's going on.
And before we introduce her, I'm going to let you introduce her, but before we do that, let's just run down real quick what's going on in the world of statehood. There's nothing much going on as far as the fight to get the statehood bill moved on Capitol Hill. As you know, we have 120 co-sponsors in the House. And Senator Carper of Delaware says he plans to introduce companion legislation in the Senate by the end of the month. So that will be great. And we're trying to line up Senate co-sponsors for that legislation. The last I talked to the senator's office early in the week, we had 8 for sure and 4 or 5 more that looked like they were going on. There were rumors towards the end of the week that we'd gotten 3 or 4 more. So we're in pretty good shape to introduce the bill, and they want to introduce the bill this month before the end of June. So that's all the good news. We also had a meeting this week with the mayor's people, who are pretty much twiddling their thumbs and wondering what to do about budget autonomy. As you may or may not know, last week there was a court decision overturning an earlier decision by a lower court that said that budget autonomy, the budget autonomy referendum passed by the District of Columbia 2 years ago, was unconstitutional. There's been a ruling by the court that's overturned that decision, but it hasn't made any decision on whether budget autonomy is or is not legal at this point in the District of Columbia. So we're kind of in limbo. And I'd just like to say for the record one more time that statehood gives you budget autonomy. Statehood gives you voting rights. Statehood gives you everything. So it's time to stop screwing around with budget autonomy and move on to statehood. Now I leave it up to you, Kathleen. That's my report for the
week.
Well,
there you go. So I am going to introduce, as we speak now, Haley Jardis. She graduated from American University with a double major in theater performance and broadcast journalism. She has previously worked as a teacher, actor, communications coordinator, and recreation specialist. And currently she's working for, I believe it's actually the D.C. Statehood Commission office, which is part of the shadow delegation. But she's also running, preparing for the Miss District of Columbia pageant, a preliminary to Miss America. And as a contestant, Haley has raised over $2,000 and counting for the Children's Miracle Network hospitals and is an advocate for mental health with her platform, Mental Health Matters. The competition takes place on Sunday, June the 14th, and the winner will compete at Miss America on September 13th in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So with that, Haley, are you there?
I am. Glad to be here.
Hello?
Welcome. Welcome. We're glad to have you on the show.
Oh, there we go.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great, Haley. So,
go ahead, Kathleen. Well, it seems like we've lost Kathleen for a second. Haley, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm sorry. Haley, first of all, let me tell you how excited we are to have you in the office. Although, I must admit, I am a little upset that I'm no longer the prettiest person in the office. I was up until, you know, sometimes Strauss thinks that he is, but it's really been me all along. All kidding aside, we're glad to have you, and I want to know a little bit about the competition that you're in next Sunday. And let me point this out to everybody. This lady is about to go into a really tough competition next Sunday, so we're particularly happy that she's taken the time out and appreciative to come on our show, because we know you've got a lot on your plate right now. But tell us a little bit about the pageant.
Sure. So the Miss District of Columbia organization has its pageant next Sunday in 1 week, and so for that competition we have five areas. There's the interview. There's a 10-minute interview where the seven judges this year. The judges will ask you any question from what's your favorite book to how do you feel about drone strikes. Anything is on the table. They can ask you about anything and everything, and it's your job to respond, and it's your job to tell them what you think, and it's their opportunity to get a feel for who you are and what your personality is and what you would be like if you were on a talk show, or things like that. So that's the first phase of competition. That actually happens on the Saturday beforehand. And then on Sunday, when we're all on stage, we have our lifestyle and fitness, which that's our what you would think of as the swimsuit portion. We call it lifestyle and fitness. There's the evening gown portion. There's a talent portion. And then there is an on-stage question portion where the judges ask us two questions on stage. And usually there's something about DC and then something about our platform. And my platform is called Mental Health Matters. It's about advocacy for mental health, eliminating the stigma, reaching out to people who are suffering with a mental ailment, and letting them know that they're not alone, that there are resources for them to help them get through what they're getting through. Because statistics show us that 1 in 4 people are going to suffer through some sort of mental ailment in their lifetime. And so with those odds, 1 in 4, that's very likely that someone that you love, someone that you know, or even yourself, you may have some sort of issue, whether it's depression, anxiety, a phobia, post-traumatic stress disorder. The list goes on and on. And these are very, very common things, and they're very, very real things that people deal with. And it's not talked a lot. It's not talked about a lot because it's hard to see a mental illness. It's hard to talk about something that's so personal and that's so deep inside someone that people are embarrassed a lot of the time. And then there's a lot of issues that people have with others believing them because it's something that's so hard to see, unlike something like diabetes or cancer or cystic fibrosis, things like that. And so that's your basic scope of what happens with the pageant and my own little personal platform. And each girl has their own personal platform. So each contestant will have their own cause and their own advocacy. And mine is mental health.
Well, I just like to say, I think there's also a huge stigma about this in our society. I was raised by several crazy Italian women who would have never sought any kind of therapy for whatever. I'm sure they had all sorts of ailments, but you know, there's a social stigma, and we really have to get over it. So I commend you for stepping forward in such a public way and supporting this and making it your platform, because it's really important that we talk about it. And I think the more we talk about it, the easier it gets for people, you know, to seek help. And I think that's very often what people have to do. So how many contestants are there at this point?
There are 18 of us, 18 contestants. So myself and 17 other lovely ladies.
And what did you have to do to get this far? I mean, were there other competitions that you had to go through to get to the final stage?
There's a preliminary phase where anyone can apply, and that phase includes an interview and a talent portion, and as well as a bit of paperwork that we submit that just tells the judges and the board a little bit about who we are and what we've done so far. So I don't know how many contestants or how many potential contestants we had apply for that preliminary phase, but from it, we got 18 very capable contestants, and these women range from law students to medical students, and they're very intelligent, very involved with other platforms, such as domestic violence and disaster preparedness, and it sounds like I'm talking up my competition, and I kind of am, because they're all really cool people, and it's I've been competing since 2010. I competed for 3 years, took 2 years off, and I'm back for my last year. And the women that I've met in this process and throughout the years are just, they're the people that I text when I have an issue. They're the people I call when I break up with a boyfriend. They're the people that I hang out with on Saturday night. They're my girls.
I'm going to let Kathleen talk in a minute. She says I monopolize the show, but I do want to say that through Senator Strauss, I've taken several of these women. We've sponsored a couple of luncheons for them in the Senate dining room, and I have to agree with you. They're amazing young women. At my table, I can't remember if it was the last year or the year before, but I met a young woman who became an emancipated minor. She lived in an abusive home. She left at the age of 16. She became, I believe it was Miss Oregon. I can't remember if it was Miss Oregon or Miss Washington. And she had just been accepted to medical school. So, yeah, the young women that I've met through the pageant, I've just been astounded at what incredible people they are. Do you have a question there, Kathleen? I don't want to cut you out.
Oh, yeah, yes. It's a break. You're letting me speak. Thank you. You know, Haley, we had spoken. I had worked a long time as a public relation and everything at a small hospital on the border. And one of our biggest issues were the mental health patients we got in to our emergency room care, because there is no real mental health, what would I say, kind of policy or place where people can go who are having issues with their medications, or they've taken something that's, you know, really upset them. So a lot of times, you know, we didn't have the facility to deal with mental illness. And it's a very mm-hmm. complicated, very complex thing when somebody comes to the emergency room and or they've taken the wrong drugs or they're having a breakdown. So it's something that really needs a platform that really needs to be out there, because as we've seen with shootings in Arizona and all that, you know, it's all leading to the issue of mental health and the breakdown of no services for people who are having these problems. And it's across the board, and the shootings in the schools, and the shootings, like I said, with Gabby Gefford and such, and in these small hospitals that are having to deal with and don't have the facilities. You know, when we were dealing with these patients, we had to have, actually by state law, a room that was padded, you know, have all the kinds of things in which to be able to keep somebody from hurting themselves. But it's such a part of health, yet there's not really the support services there to be able to provide that services. Do you find that kind of being the issue here as you have made this your platform?
For this, there's so many issues deep-rooted within all of this, and I see that one of the biggest ones being prevention and preventative care that is entirely possible with mental health when diagnoses are made and these people can find help at the beginning before it gets to that point, before it gets to any kind of extreme measures and any kind of extreme treatment. But when we're in a society where we don't want to talk about that kind of stuff and we want to avoid it, and they're kind of off, but no one says anything, and a doctor just kind of skirts around it, or a patient skirts around something and doesn't tell it to their doctor, then we get into an area where these situations, they go unchecked until they're in that final awful stage. And we see things like you mentioned, like school shootings and suicide. One of the biggest killers that comes from mental illness. And it's 100% preventable death. Suicide is 100% preventable. But we need to be putting our time and effort into advocacy and telling all of these people and their loved ones that getting help early is the best thing to do and the best way to take care of yourself. And I also think that the fact that a lot of these hospitals don't have the staff and the resources is something that a lot of Americans aren't aware about, and they don't know what these hospitals look like. They don't know what a mental health facility consists of, because all of our views of mental health are straitjackets and padded rooms and sanatoriums where someone gets sent away and never seen again. And that's really not the case, and that's really not what it's like, and that's really a false idea of what mental health and mental treatment is. It's very different.
Right.
Well, and I'm sorry, Hallie. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
How much of this is really a resource problem, do you think? Maybe you don't know the answer to this question, but do we not put as much money into this? Obviously, we're not putting as much money as we should, but do we not put as much money as we used to put into this? Because I remember living up on Capitol Hill during the Reagan administration when they were cutting all sorts of programs, including mental health programs, and all of a sudden we had this explosion of homeless people, many of whom needed treatment, but were mm-hmm. Not allowed into treatment facilities. So, are we still cutting back on funding for mental health, or do you know the answer to that question, or are we putting
resources into it? I don't have any solid numbers.
Yeah.
I don't have any solid numbers or figures for you, but from what I'm seeing and from what I've been reading and what I know of the District of Columbia, if you look at St. Elizabeth's is on 14th Street, that's kind of the place that's known as where you go for mental health if you're in a mid to low income situation. And it's kind of the butt of a lot of jokes, like, oh, you're looking a little off today. Should we call St. E's for you?
Yeah.
And so I think that speaks a lot to what the state of mental health and mental health care in the district specifically is. And you do see a lot of homeless people who have outward signs of mental illness, and you kind of wonder, if we were putting more resources into this, what situation would they be in, and how much money would we be spending on the front end helping these people versus how much money we're spending on the back end in emergency rooms and in emergency shelter situations.
Well, and that's so always the case with mm-hmm. short-sightedness in government, you know, whether we're talking about mental health or even, you know, things like education. If you spend more money on the front end getting kids proper educations, then you don't spend as much money on jails and work programs and other things on the back end. So I think that's unfortunately a common problem in government. I'm sorry, Kathleen, do you want to say something? Are you out there still?
No, I'm still here. I'm always waiting for a chance to step in. But, let me ask you something. Let me ask you this. You know, your charity is the Children's Miracle Network. Can you just explain what it does and maybe how you chose it? And maybe give us an idea if there's anyone out there who would like to maybe contribute, how they can do that.
Gladly. So the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals is an organization that helps fund hospitals around the United States for kids and their families who can't afford medical treatment and paying their medical bills. And the Miss America organization is a national advocate for the Children's Miracle Network, and by extension, so are all the state title holders and their contestants. So to compete in Miss America, there is actually a minimum fundraising amount. There's a minimum amount of $250 that each contestant has to raise in order to compete. And for Miss America and the Miss America organization, that's the only monetary requirement for competing. We don't pay registration fees. We don't pay competition fees or any kind of entrance fee. We don't pay the Miss America organization anything like that. The minimum is $250 for the Children's Miracle Network, and you have to fundraise that. And BC last year raised more money than any other 50 states and Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. So there's little BC, and we raised the most out of anyone at Miss America. And so this year, I've passed the 250 mark. I've passed $2,000, and I'm going to see how high we can go. Maybe we can get to 3,000. And for that, I sent you guys the link, so you guys will have the link for that. But the website is also missamerica4kids.com/donations/HaleyJardis. And then you can find my page for fundraising, and the top fundraiser gets the Miracle Maker Award at Miss America and at Miss DC. There's a smaller Miracle Maker Award.
Well, you know, first of all, let me again point out that Haley has raised almost 10 times the minimum. So she's doing a great job. And to tell you, if you didn't get that, address, we'll repeat it again at the end of the show, but we will also post it on our webpage at BBS Radio. So if you don't have a pen handy, you can always go to our show on BBS Radio, and at the end of the show, we'll make sure that address gets posted. We have a caller on line two, Taboo.
Taboo.
Right, hello, who hasn't called in a long time. Let's see what's up. What's up, Taboo?
A lot.
Do you have a question for us or for Haley?
I have a question for Haley, if it's okay.
Yes, yeah. Sure.
If it's okay with Haley, it's okay with us.
Okay, well, first, Haley, let me thank you for running, and secondly, let me thank you again for taking such a I think, a very necessary and very interesting topic of mental health.
Thank you.
And my question is about mental health. And I was just wondering how you saw what standard or what, I guess, guide or standard of guide is used to determine whether someone has abnormal behavior. Is there, how do you determine, you know, where is that, is there a line?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm asking, I'm sorry.
Sure. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, I'm concerned about certain basic things. You know, I'm wondering, are we socialized? A lot of our mental problem is because of the environment in which we're living in, what's causing it. You know, then there are those who do certain things. Well, for example, let's say the greed that's in society. Well, I should ask the question, I guess, is greed considered a mental illness?
Huh. That's such an interesting question, and one that I've never would have thought of greed as a mental illness. But to speak to your question on the whole, and how does one determine what abnormal behavior is and what specifically constitutes mental illness, my first line that I will say to anyone who asks for specifically medical advice is that I'm not a medical doctor. And my own experiences have been my own, and I am happy to share them. I personally was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder when I was 20 years old. And what I have learned from my experiences and my own journey have helped inform who I am and how I see the world and how I conduct myself in the world. But I caution anyone who is going through any kind of issues to seek attention and advice from a medical doctor, because what has worked for me won't necessarily work for someone else. And I've seen that people will get frustrated trying to do what someone else did in order to heal themselves, when really it's their own journey. As far as greed and other abnormal activities and other abnormal behavior, I think that's an interesting thing that there's a lot of new research coming out daily on all sorts of things that have to do with mental health. And a lot of them have to do with new things that we're finding in our own society, like the internet and Facebook, and how that affects us mentally and how that affects how we interact with people. And I think that this research is really fascinating, but we still need some more information to back it up, because it's all very, very new research. But I'll tell you that I'll keep an eye out for anything that I see about greed or any kind of abnormal behavior. And what I do for as part of Mental Health Matters is that through social media, and I have a brand new website. It's still in the beginning phases. MentalHealthMattersBC.org. I try to aggregate as much news as I possibly can. Whenever I see articles, whenever I see interesting research, I can't tell you how many different listservs I'm signed up to, and how much I read every morning and every day about mental health and about what's being done and what's being researched. And I love to share as much as I possibly can. And I'm always getting comments from people, from strangers and from people I've known for years, saying thank you for this information, and it's very interesting information. And I will definitely keep an eye out for anything to do with behavior.
Well, thank you. Could I make a suggestion just from some of my limited experiences?
Yes,
a lot of time, it appears, you know, sometimes people are diagnosed or classified as being having mental illness, when simply, in my opinion, it's nothing. It's a normal, where they're angry, and when you're angry, you act abnormally, and anger is a normal reaction to a traumatic situation. And a lot of times, this traumatic situation is caused by greedy people, the policies that we make in society, etc. So I think a lot of times, the people with mental illnesses that's causing this effect is not diagnosed. So just keep that in mind, and that's how I see it. And I thank you so much for all of your talents in running, and you're a very interesting candidate.
Well, you know what, Tabby?
Thank you.
Let me
so
just
much.
excuse me, let me just add to that, and I'm certainly no expert, but, you know, I would think that greed, for example, would be a symptom more than a, you know, a cause itself. You know, I don't know. I'm not, like you say, I'm not a professional. I had psychology 101, which I'm sure I probably begged the professor on my hands and knees to pass me in the course. But, you know, I would think that, you know, greed might be a symptom of narcissism or something else. I don't know. But I think you're right. I think that this is a very complex, a very complex matter, and there are a lot of different components that you have to look at. And I'm sure a lot of them are environmental and social. And let me just commend you, Haley, on doing the website, because I think if you can get a blog and that sort of thing going and just get people talking, that that will probably help a lot in the long run.
Well, just I like for to, people to say
yes,
it
and the idea that greed is a symptom is very, very real, and it's a lot of symptoms and a lot of disabilities that mental health issues that cause disabilities are defined as something that inhibits one or more daily activities. So a lot of times doctors will look at a specific symptom and will say, is this inhibiting one or more daily activities, and then what needs to be changed for that? And so that's a good baseline usually, and that's actually also what the ADA uses in the Americans with Disabilities Act in the law.
Well, have you heard anybody ever talk about megalomania? You know, since you will be representing the district, you know, a political city, megalomania.
Yeah,
you know,
everybody we know, Taboo, suffers from that.
Exactly.
In politics,
the more power
yes.
they get, the more they want. To me,
yes.
that's a very dangerous ailment, psychological ailment.
Yes.
Well, Taboo, I kind of agree with you. I think that our society has changed so much, and we are definitely more people, but our behavior impacts everyone else's behavior and feelings, you know, and when we're also self-involved and me, and don't show compassion or understanding, it has an impact on those people who we are treating that way. They feel lonely, they feel disconnected, they feel adrift, which leads to anxieties and all that stuff. I mean, it is, we really have to understand, I think, that mental illness comes from, it's everywhere around us, it's in our families, and we have to look at how we treat one another, I think, as one way of dealing with the awareness, because I think it's everywhere, it's in everybody's family, whether it's depression or anxieties. I mean, I know so many kids that have anxieties when they see, you know, well, I always talk about this after 9/11, when that happened, my son was in first grade. And the big promise in New York was, we're going to make sure that all the children have therapy to deal with this traumatic issue. Well, they never did that. And when my son's friends grew up, they have a fear of the Muslims. That is, they won't get in a car with them, in the cabs. They won't get in an elevator with them. And that's part of what happens when you don't deal with how these world events impact our children and our society.
Well, and you know what? For those of you that don't live in Washington, D.C., I love this city, but there are many times that I think we should change our slogan from Justus Omnibus, justice for everybody, to it's all about me. Because, you know, there are a lot of people in Washington, D.C. that really act like that. It's all about them. It's all about politics. It's all about, you know. So, again, Haley, I think you're doing a great thing by reaching out, because I think the more that people understand that as Kathleen has rightfully pointed out, that this is something that we all have to deal with, I think we'll deal with it more. I really do.
And I want to say that
Taboo. Go ahead.
I want to say about Taboo is not one of those people that it's all about him. He's a great
guy.
No,
that's true.
He cares a lot.
He is a great guy. We care. He calls in several. It's been a while since we've heard from you, Taboo, but we're glad that you've called in, and we hope you'll continue to call in. Should we?
Well, I had to call in when I. I had to call in when I heard the young candidate running, because I really admire the young people when they take a stand, and I just want to thank her for running.
Yes. And this is a lovely lady, by the way, that works in our office now, so you need to come down to the Wilson Building and introduce yourself.
I will do that.
Okay. Good.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
See you soon.
Bye-bye. Should we take a little break now, Kathleen?
Yes,
we're going to take a break and just for a couple of minutes, and we're going to play a song from my home girl, Queen Latifah, who was born in Newark, New Jersey, just like I was. And this actually is in honor of our guest today, Haley. It's a song called Champion. We'll be back in a few minutes. And we're back with Haley Jardis, who's a contestant in the Miss DC pageant, which is after she wins that. She'll be going on to Atlantic City on September 13th to compete in the Miss America contest. And I want you to know, Haley, I've already put that on my calendar, Atlantic City, September 13th, so we can be there to cheer you on. But let me just ask.
Fantastic. We got to say if I win. I know it's a knock on wood kind of thing, but we don't want anyone to think all the scores are added up the night of, so nothing's been pre-decided.
Well, as somebody that's run for public office a lot, I understand that concept. When the votes get counted, then you find out what happens. But let me ask you, what is your talent? Do I remember correctly that you're a singer?
I am. I'm a trained singer. I went to school at American University, and Linda Allison, my lovely voice teacher, and I had several other professors, Colleen Jennings, Carl Coppola, Carl Menninger, and Kara Gabriel, Javier Rivera. They were all really great people who helped me to hone my craft and work really hard, and I don't think any of them ever expected me to be using it on the stage for a preliminary for Miss America, but I know they're all thrilled. And so
So what's your song?
Is actually,
can you tell us, or is that a secret?
Yeah, I can tell you. It's so... Which part of this should I explain first? So I am singing a recreation of Taylor Swift's Blank Space.
Uh-huh.
By Postmodern Jukebox, by Scott Bradley. He's a composer in L.A., and his band, the Postmodern Jukebox, or Postmodern Jukebox, no, the. And so it's a big band jazz version of a Taylor Swift song. And so it's really snappy and jazzy, and I'm going to have a lot of fun with it. I've been having a lot of fun with it so far, so I'm looking forward to it. I think it's something that's got that popular culture flair, but is still kind of classic and jazzy, and I'm really looking forward to showing the judges what I can do.
Great. Well, you know, I'm a singer. I'm performing in the shower by popular demand, same place I've been. But yeah, I'm a frustrated singer. My mom was an amateur actress and a singer. I walk around the house singing, even though it annoys everybody, including the dog. But I don't care, you know. So that's great. Kathleen, do you have a question? I don't want to be accused of shutting you out.
Oh, my gosh. You're only doing that because Haley's on the show and you're trying to be a good guy. Yeah, I do have a question. Well, maybe we can move on then. We'll go from the pageant to her position within the D.C. statehood or the commission. What is it that you call this new kind of thing? You know, which I'm very outspoken because I don't like the whole thing. I like you, Haley, very much. But the whole thing, I think it should be different funding, more funding. I think the senators and the representatives should be paid. I think they should have an office just like every other senator, and I think it should be a full-time position and where it really worked her statehood. But were you born in D.C.?
I was not. I chose to live in D.C. in 2009, and is my adopted home. I'm originally from South Florida, from Fort Myers, Florida, and I moved up here for school, and I have fallen in love with the city, and I've stayed here ever since.
Well, we get a lot of people that way. I mean, Kathleen went to AU, my wife went to AU, and they both, that's how they both found the city, right? I mean, Pat's, my wife's lived here ever since she was an AU student.
And I moved on to New York because I always, but I loved it too. So when did you start being aware of statehood as an issue when you came to D.C.?
The first time I actually came in contact with the issue of statehood was as a contestant for Miss D.C. My first year that I competed, 2010, right after my freshman year of college, we were having a rehearsal for the pageant. We were learning our opening number, and Senator Strauss came to speak to all of us. And it was the first time I got to meet him, and he told us all about the issue of statehood. And I knew that we were not a state, but I also knew that we went into a voter booth and we cast a ballot, but I didn't know that my vote for president wouldn't count when I went to vote. And since then, I've kept in touch with Senator Strauss and all of his events, and I get his invitations to march in parades, and I think he remembered me because we both went to AU. And then when this opportunity for the Statehood Initiatives Agency came up, he brought it up to me, and I was working in the Department of Parks and Rec. In a different agency, and it seemed like a very good fit, and so far it's I've seen that it has been a good fit.
Well, first of all, let me tell you, it's exciting to have you in the office because we need the energy of young people to keep this movement going, and unfortunately, to a certain extent, we have a hard time getting young people involved. I mean, if there was one mission that I would task you with, that I would ask you to do, it would be to think of ways that we can get more young people involved. Because, you know, this is a fight that's gone on for 213 years, and I'm getting old. Senator Strauss, although he won't admit it, is also getting old, and we need to pass the mantle on. As part of what we do, it's part of our responsibility, I think, to educate young people and get them more involved. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that I know exactly how to do that anymore. Since Kathleen tells me that I'm woefully out of touch. my music's from the 1970s and my
60s.
And my, all right, the 1960s, and my
that's good
political
music. We just
philosophy
call it classic
is
now.
Older than that. So it's great to have you and have you do that. Is there anybody in the pageant that you know of in your several incarnations here that's ever taken statehood as their issue? DC statehood as their issue?
No, not that I can recall. Yeah. I do remember we had a contestant the first year that I competed who, Ashton Kunkel, her last year competing was my first year competing, and her platform was encouraging people to vote, and it was based around getting people out there and getting people voting. And that's the closest that any contestant has come to an issue of D.C. statehood.
And what's the age limit, if you don't mind me asking? Is that what decides when you can stop competing? There's a certain age?
Yes. 24 is the cap. So once you turn 25, you can't compete. We call it aging out in the pageant world. So when you have someone who's aged out, it means they've turned 25 and they can't compete any longer.
Well, Kathleen and I have both aged out.
Hey, speak for yourself.
Yeah, okay. I've aged out.
Yes, you've aged
I have
out.
I have children that have almost aged out. So,
one more question,
sorry,
Healy. As you, you know, one of the things I always think that needs to be done kind of in statehood is definitely bringing in new people, you know, new people with new ideas and stuff like that. And I think Michael, of course, is very right. It has to be kind of spurned on by the youth because it's, you know, it really impacts you all, everyone's ability to vote and have a say in how their money is spent. And I'm always shocked when I see the sign that just said what D.C. residents have paid as of this year, $1.5 billion in taxes. What did you say, Michael, that D.C. pays more in taxes than 12 other states?
Yeah, 12 other states. We pay in total tax money more than 12 other states. And per capita, we pay the highest federal taxes of all 50 states. But just in the total sum, we also pay more than 12 other states.
And it just, you know, I mean, that should just make people so angry that the basis of the democracy or the here in the United States, which was no taxation without representation, is not being addressed. So do you have any idea or are you thinking about how the office is going to reach out to the community or maybe even beyond the community? I mean, I think you got to get the community starting to really rally and having like a, you know, 1,000 people or more, hopefully 50,000 marching on D.C. on the Capitol. But have you, and it might be soon, I mean, I know you just joined, but if you had a utopia and you could just do whatever you wanted, what would be one of the first things you think you would try to tackle?
It's such a big issue, and we get so much. We've got a lot that we can do and a lot of work to do, and I like that my work is kind of cut out for me in terms of what to do with the Statehood Initiative Agency. Excuse me. I know we've got plans for all sorts of festivals and parades on the horizon. That's one of the big things, wherever there's an available opportunity for visibility. And I think that your comment earlier about young people and bringing young people in is one of our biggest things and one of the biggest targets we should have, because I know a lot of people, a lot of millennials and a lot of Generation X who still, they move to D.C., but they aren't registered to vote in D.C. They still have their driver's licenses and their technical residency for different states, Ohio and California and Florida and all over the place. And I think getting those voters registered in D.C. and getting those people on the side of D.C. is a big task and an important task. And I take pride in the fact that I am a registered D.C. voter and I am a D.C. resident and I voted for the mayor and I voted for my councilman and I know which ward I live in, and I think that's an important thing for a young person and a woman running for Miss D.C. to know where she is and what her city is doing and just being a civically responsible citizen. And I think that once these people who have moved to D.C. realize that in order to be involved with the city that they live in and the city that they love, they need to be able to register and they need to be voting for the issues.
Absolutely. And we know that you'll breathe some life into the office and help us get those things accomplished. And they're very important. But let me ask you one last question. And that is, why the Miss D.C. pageant? Why is it important for you to be in the Miss D.C. pageant, to put yourself out there? I mean, you really, as somebody, I'm a politician and I stand before crowds and give speeches all the time. And it seems to me that somebody that was diagnosed with your disorder, this is a really, really brave thing that you're doing. And so what is it that you're getting from it? Why do it?
Well, as someone with generalized anxiety disorder handling something like this, to that I say, smooth seas never made a skillful sailor. So if you're looking for someone who can deal with fast-paced, stressful environments, I can do that without batting an eye now. It's one of my special skills. And through the Misty Sea organization in the past 5 years that I've been involved, I've met so many different people, and I've gotten to work with so many different organizations. That's how I met Senator Strauss and got involved with statehood. And through that, I've worked with the Creative Coalition. I've met so many different people, and I've gone to so many different events for the Asian Pacific Islanders Caucus. I've been able to go to the Sister Cities International Gala, and I've just seen and met so many different people, and I've really been inspired to do great work and to do the great work that these people are doing with my own platform. And I really want to take my platform and use the title of Miss DC, and then maybe one day the title of Miss America, to be able to move it forward. I would love to give a TED Talk. I want to publish a book or some sort of publication based on my experience and the experience of others. And I want to produce a documentary. I want to get out there, and I want to show people what someone with a mental illness can do. And I really want to get out there, and I also want to speak to the other things that Miss America and Miss DC stand for. I want to boost the Children's Miracle Network, because the thing about the Children's Miracle Network is that every dollar that you give, it doesn't go off into some big pot for their operating budget to pay their advertising or to pay their executive. Every dollar that you give to the Children's Miracle Network stays local. So every dollar that has been donated to my fund for the Children's Miracle Network, that I think I'm at $2,200 right now, that goes straight to Children's National on Michigan Avenue.
Well, that's great. And I think that's And it's great that you're, you know, that you have the courage to stand out on stage and do this. So I really commend you for that. And again, go to our website, folks, if you want to know how to contribute to Haley and the Children's Miracle Network. Next Sunday.
And I would say that website, Michael, yep. Let me just say what the website yep. is. It's bbsradio.com/ Shadow Politics, and you'll find all the links that Haley is talking about on that website.
And let me tell you that next week, next Sunday, in addition to rooting for Haley, I will be in Chicago attending my daughter Trisha's graduation. She will be graduating from DePaul University with honors. We're so proud of her, so I want to give her a shout out. She's been on the dean's list every semester that she's been in college, and she'll be receiving her bachelor's degree and getting a job soon so that her dad no longer has to pay her rent. That's my hope anyway. But so we'll be airing a rerun of a previous show. And we'll see you. Kathleen and I will be back on the 21st. Hopefully we'll have another exciting guest. Thank you so much, Haley, for coming on the show. We've all got our fingers crossed. We'll all be cheering for you next week. And
thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and we're already, you know, Kathleen and I are already checking out room rates in Atlantic City on September 13th, so we can be there
all
and
right.
be crowned Miss America. But thank you so much for being on the show. We'll see you next week, America. You've got the last word, Kathleen.
Hey, just a shout out to my son, who's Mateo, who's out here visiting me for a couple of weeks. And thanks, America. And listen, we're going to have some great guests in the next coming weeks. And that's it. Thank you for listening.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.